listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 148 of Rogue Startups. Apologies for the missed episode last week. Craig and I could not make that happen. Craig was out, and I was unable to get a guest on short notice. So we are back, but not only are we back, but supercharged, I would say, this week. Wouldn't you, Craig?
Yeah, man. I think, the double-edged sword of taking some time off is we have a lot more shit to talk about, which is cool. And I think, for a lot of people, the reason they listen to our show is to hear kind of the things that we're doing and learning along the way. We've only podcast kind of two out of the last 4 or 5 weeks. So a lot of stuff has happened and is happening in our lives and businesses in that time. So yeah, it'll be cool to catch up on some of that stuff. And then we are asking some very insightful questions this week. That's kind of the big topic, right?
Yes. Yes. And we'll get to that in a minute. So you just came back from SaaStock, yes? Or was it SaaStor?
SaaStor, well, I guess they have SaaStor Europa in Paris, but SaaStock is like the big SaaS VC conference in Europe, and it's in Dublin. And gotcha. Yeah, it was great, man. It was great. I go to it, and I like going to it because it offers a really different perspective than things like MicroConf or Big Snow Tiny Conf or FemtoConf or something like that that we go to a lot. It's that, and it's getting to see, a lot of my friends. Like, I'm in a mastermind group with two other guys here in Europe, and they both were there, so that was cool. We went out to dinner one night. It's a little bit of kind of like mini founder retreat, get away, have some time in your mind, to focus on your business, but also like network a little bit. And just kind of be around people like that are running these big, huge monster businesses. Like the CTO from Slack was there and gave a talk and was kind of chumming around with folks afterwards. And I'm like, it's just great to be able to like be around those people, you know?
Nice. Nice. Was Stelly also there?
Totally. Yeah. And of course the F-bomb laden talk was wonderful, but yeah, it was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some tweets that popped out of that, and some people were like doing F-bomb counts, and I'm like, that doesn't compare to the MicroConf talk, where I think it was like he hit like high 50s, where he had just like was laying it bare.
Yeah.
And it was definitely the most shocking MicroConf talk either before or since. So I'm sure, but he just has great stuff to talk about when he actually has things to say. It's just, if you're offended by that kind of language, it's just going to go right past you, which is unfortunate, but that's Stelly's style, and I don't think he means anything by it. It's just he's got content and he's got attitude, and I love it.
The the best was there was a guy who brought his son, like 8 or 10 year old son, to the conference, and they were in Stelly's talk. And about halfway through, like the dad and the son just got up and left, and everybody was like, "Oh my god!" The one kid at the conference came to Stelly's talk. It's like the worst possible luck.
I can totally see that happening. Yeah.
But it was cool, man. It was really a nice conference. A lot of the stuff totally kind of doesn't and didn't apply to me. With there's as many VCs there as there are founders and employees of startups and stuff like that. And so that was just not my thing. But what it does, it kind of ups a lot of people's game that are going to these conferences to be like, I got to show my best stuff and I got to present this or whatever. And so like, in that respect, it does just put on a different air. And that's a huge conference, like almost 3,000 people. So.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
So what was like your big takeaway from the conference that you were like, I need to do now?
Yeah, man. So my biggest takeaway from the conference was really like the first half of the first day. And it was all about the flow from like website visitor to onboarding. That includes like new trial sign up. And really, like, I heard three talks on it in the first, like, the morning part of the first day, and really just like opened my eyes to, like, challenging my kind of assumptions of like credit card required up front, or like credit card after they do something in the app, or something. So, like, specific to Castos, we're going to start looking pretty hard at like what does the flow look like for a new website visitor to experiencing the app look like. And I'm sure we'll kind of be trying and testing some of that stuff out here in really the next few months, probably. Because I mean, from a technical standpoint, the app is pretty decently done, and so now it's like, how can we maximize some of our more top of the funnel things, you know?
Interesting. Okay. So these studies or these case studies that came up in the conference were basically saying that you should push people towards a credit card required because they convert better. Was that sort of the gist of it?
No, that wasn't it. I mean, it was really a lot
Or
of like,
just alternate ways to think about it.
just a lot of like open-ended questions. Like, one of them was David Skok gave a talk on like, is your funnel built like a customer would see it, or is it built like you see a customer going through your funnel? So like, is your funnel mimicking what a real visitor and like fan of your brand sees, or is it like trying to maximize a thing that is kind of bullshit, you know? And so that was like the first part of like, wow, like how and when and why do you go from like awareness to engagement, you know, and that like top of funnel, middle of funnel kind of thing. And then some guys from Calendly talked about like how they do onboarding, in both like in-app and messaging and email and like UI stuff. So those are the two things that really like kind of made me say like, holy shit, like this is, we just haven't paid enough attention to it, 'cause like, whatever. We've had other things that we have to pay attention to, but now like that's kind of the place we're going to start paying some more attention. So, and like the guys from AppQuse were there, and they of course had a ton of really great data that they were kind of laying out in some talks. So yeah, it was good. So there's a lot of really like high level talks, like high end talks.
So it was less tactical and more strategic.
Yes, no, 100%. Yeah, very little like, run a Facebook ad like this, more like how you organize your thought process and your business and stuff like that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. Of course, Dublin is wonderful. Always, I love it. So, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, how about you, man? What's new?
Well, lots of stuff is going on. So, of course, today is October 23rd, and Black Friday, Cyber Monday preparation has been in full swing here for weeks. And that's part of the reason I wasn't able to pull a guest together last week. I was trying to get a bunch of things out the door for recapture and I's dotted and T's crossed and content queued up and email sequences and Black Friday tips and all this other stuff because it's all super time sensitive. If you don't get it out now, if you don't queue it up now, like I'm not going to be doing this a week or two or three from now. It's just not going to happen. We pushed out a major new feature in Recapture out into beta finally, and I've got two customers that are already starting to use it as of today.
Cool.
And yeah, this has been in process since August, so that's probably the fastest that we've gotten a major, and by major I mean like there's substantial UI changes and workflow and upgrade stuff and testing and just all kinds of crazy stuff that went into it. So, and I did quite a bit of the work on this one. My developer also did a lot of the testing and validation, and he found out a lot of stuff where I screwed things up and missed this and did that. And I was still sort of learning Node the whole time going through all of this. And, I didn't really have to do a lot of UI work because a lot of the UI screens were somewhat similar to what we had, but they still had substantial changes that had to happen. So it's not like I had to learn React or anything like that, but it was still just a shit ton of work to push that thing out the door. And I was, you know, I had said it had to be out by end of September, and for a variety of reasons, it slipped a few weeks. Legitimate reasons. There were some other production issues that suddenly took precedence, and some people that were saying, "Hey, if you don't have this over here in Shopify, we're just leaving." And, you know, it turned out that they weren't that hard to do, but it took like a week away from things. So, you know, it distracted us here and there. But it is out. It's now available. And that's good because now people coming into Black Friday, Cyber Monday can now use win-back emails, which is good. So that's been one of the big pushes. In addition to that, when I wasn't working on the code or testing or something like that, was trying a bunch of other things out there. So we did another cold email campaign. You might remember back in August, I was doing all sorts of customer research and trying to get audiences and set stuff up so I could find groups of Magento users and groups of Shopify users that fit certain criteria. And I had all these spreadsheets, and I had this tool that I was using. It was costing an ungodly amount of money, so I only had it for 1 month. Downloaded as much data as I possibly could figure out at the time. And then I had to do something with it because it took me a while to sort of put it all together, build up the audiences, decide what was the right message, get the content behind that, get some creatives and some graphics for Facebook ads in an inexpensive way. And so now all of that has kind of come together as well. And I'm running Facebook ads right now, and we did some cold email campaigns. It's early to tell what the Facebook stuff is or is not driving at this point, but I can definitely say that the email, cold email campaign, for the second time fell right on its fucking face.
Yeah.
You know, I hit this one way harder than I hit the last one. I very much went into deeper, better subject lines. I had, you know, I don't want to say I had thinner content, but I tried to make the content shorter and more engaging in the right ways. Mm-hmm. I tried to make it targeted. I segmented my audience so that I had them by their specific type of store that they ran. I tried to put statistics in front of them that said, hey, look, Recapture does this for these kind of stores, which is exactly like your store. And, you know, I had some responses, but universally they were all like, fuck off, Dave. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to email from you at all. Take me off your shitty list.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, God damn it. So, yeah, I had some conversations with other friends of mine that do more successful cold email campaigns, and they were showing me their open rates and kind of how they approached it. And it was very – well, it was very disheartening for one thing. But second of all, it, you know, it was very enlightening in that the way and the method that they approached people had to do with a specific – event or a need. But I didn't really have that. Like, I didn't have that trigger that said, hey, I know that you were just looking for a job, or you posted a job like this for this kind of a person, and, you know, did you ever fill that role? Because I've got this thing over here. Like, that would be an event.
Yeah.
I don't
context. Context to put someone
it's
in.
It's very much a context. And that, you know, I saw my friend was sharing that he had like 81% open rates and 15% response rates.
He's lying.
No, I saw his screenshots. He shared it with me. He's not lying. And it was amazing, but it wasn't like he wasn't doing this across 1,000 people or 500 people. It was just like 100 or 80 or, you know, something like that, because he had narrowed it down so tight that he found the right people for the right message and then just hit him with it. And I haven't mastered that. So email was, again, a real disappointment and a struggle. I thought I had a better way to do this. And I thought I had an event. I thought, you know, pre-Black Friday, Cyber Monday, get people thinking about their abandoned cart emails, get them concerned about whether they have, you know, do they have the right campaigns in place? You know, have they reviewed anything since last year? Most people don't. And these were all concerns and stuff that I've talked about with other people about email marketing in general. So I thought I had a good message. I thought I had the right segmentation. I thought I had a good audience. I thought it was shit. So, yeah, that was very disappointing. But educational nonetheless. Yeah, so it's been busy. There have been a lot going on, and right now it turns out that, and I'm sure that this is not connected to my cold email campaign because my analytics and statistics do not support this at all, but I'm actually having one of the most fantastic months ever in Recapture.
That's so awesome.
I think it is more related to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and people kind of struggling to find the right app at the right time. So they're searching more right now. Yeah. So my prior channels are just hotter. It's not like I've uncovered new ones at this point. So.
Yeah. So I would love to talk about Facebook ads, but Dave, you don't know this, but I have been working on what I think will be a fantastic podcast episode for us and for our listeners. So we are going to have a Facebook ads expert on in a couple of weeks to tear down my campaigns.
Is it Moitza?
Yeah, it's Moitza. Yep.
Oh, Moitza's awesome. I love the – so I had a brief talk with her at MicroConf in Vegas this year, and she gave a talk on Facebook ads, and it was, you know, fantastic. Or maybe I think I – no, I don't think she gave a talk this year at MicroConf. I think I saw something online from one of her classes or something like that. Anyway, Moitza's great. I'm looking forward to hearing that and having her on here and being able to pepper her with some questions about my own campaigns, given the fact that I've just recently run them. Can I just say that Facebook keeps changing their fucking interface like every 2 to 3 months?
Just when you get used to it. Yeah, I know. It's horrible.
I remember, in the past 6 months, I've been into Facebook ads 3 different times. Didn't run the ads until recently, but every single goddamn time, it's different.
Yeah.
Everything's rearranged. They've changed the colors. They've moved the interface. The stuff that they're displaying is different than before. They've set things up. I mean, the Cambridge Analytica scandal has them definitely retooling a lot of stuff. And this last time, like, I had to do the most crap I've ever had to do just to get a campaign started. Because now you got this whole business manager thing you're supposed to sign up for and separate that from your Facebook account and link the two together and do all this authorization. And I'm like, what the hell is all this horseshit I'm having to do here just to run some ads?
Yep.
And I'm sure it's in response to all of that stuff, and they've now got to do all these crazy separations, and the audience stuff has changed dramatically. Just so many changes in there. So, like, all the things that I thought I knew, they're wrong. They're changed. They're different.
Yeah. And that's why, like, her and I have been talking for a couple weeks about this. It is like, I'm starting to run some Facebook ads for Castos in a couple of different types of ways. We're going to let those run for whatever, a few weeks or until like we see that they're working or they're not, and then have her come on and say like, this is why they're working or they're not. And these are lessons that people generally can take away from, like, how to realize when shit is working or not and how you have it set up and stuff. So yeah, it's going to be a really like practical thing for me and you and everybody listening. I think like I don't think I'll get any more value than everyone else listening, which is really cool, but we'll just be like a case study. So it'll be really cool. So stay tuned, probably a couple weeks out from kind of getting that live, just we got to let things run for a while. So yeah, right. Facebook is wonderful if you can make it work. So hopefully we're helping everybody on that road.
Great. Well, I'm really looking forward to that episode myself now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Glad you pulled that together.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dave, we have a couple of tough questions for maybe ourselves and for people to ponder, right?
Oh yes, more than a couple. So let me give you a little bit of background here for everybody who's listening. Recently, Chris Lemma, who, if you're not familiar with him, he works at Liquid Web. He is a vice president of something or other. I don't remember what his exact title is, but Chris Lemma is like a really smart guy in the WordPress space, and he has very strong strategic thinking. He's a mentor on Clarity.fm, big guy in the WordPress space in general, attends all the conferences, and just a really smart, good guy to know. So he also runs Cabo Press, which is another one of the smaller conferences, and they just ran a couple weeks ago, something like that. Because I saw some people that were in my MicroConf Twitter feed that also went to Cabo Press and were talking about this. In that Cabo Press conference, Chris had some he basically had created five questions that he wanted to give out during certain times. So it might be, say, all right, everybody go out to dinner and talk about this question. And it was designed as an icebreaker because every night you got dumped at a table with other people you didn't necessarily know, but people that, based on the interviews that Chris did on his intake, would be good people to connect with.
Mm.
So Chris arranged all of this stuff and then gave you something to talk about. And the questions that he gave, he tweeted them out after Cabo Press, or maybe it was before. I don't remember. Somebody tweeted them out, and I saw these things, and I'm like, oh, my God, these are incredible questions. And that's what we wanted to talk about today, is these five questions. And we actually have another one that you came back from SAS Talk with, right?
Yep, 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 absolutely. Yeah. I don't know that we'll get through all of these today, just in the interest of time, but we'll definitely get through as many as we can, and maybe we'll make this a two-parter. But yeah, so the first one is, I think, a very classic, like, just charge more, but it is, you know, what would happen if you doubled your prices or rates? And I think this is a tough one because it makes you kind of work your business backwards from price to your product or your deliverable or your service or the outcome. I don't have a great answer for this one, Dave. Like at Castos, if we charged double what we charge now, everyone would leave. So
yeah, well, wait till you get my answer. So yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so so everyone would leave, and that's probably most people's answer is like, if for the same product I have now, I charge double, everyone would leave because there's this thing called competition. And your competition probably has something kind of similar to what you do for kind of the same price, you know, give or take. So the thing you have to figure out, or I would have to figure out, or we all have to figure out, is how could you make your value twice as much to your customers?
Or more
to where it's a freaking steal at double whatever you're charging now.
Exactly. Like, you don't want it to be, oh, I get twice as much value for twice as much price. You want it to be like 10 times as much value for two times the price. And then it becomes a no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what that would be. We've raised prices once at Castos, and it's gone over okay. And we raised them by 20% or so. But I think we're definitely up against the high end of that for what we offer now. In terms of technology and things we could offer, I don't know that there's a whole lot more we could do. We would never charge someone $100 a month for podcast hosting. And that's a lot more than double. But yeah, I don't know. How about you, man? What would you try to add value with to justify doubling your prices?
Well, so I do have a little bit of experience with this in terms of just doubling the prices, like without adding the value necessarily, and that went extremely badly about this time last year.
Okay.
So I can say that you don't want to do that. Like, we had raised prices in the summer, and then I just, after a couple of months, I watched sales plummet in a very disconcerting way to the point where I was like, fuck this, I gotta go back. So, and it wasn't quite a doubling, but it was substantial enough that it gave people pause to buy it. And part of it was competition. Part of it was I just didn't have a value offering that really sort of backed that up. Part of it was, you know, I'm in a price-sensitive market with WordPress in general. And I think there has to be something there that makes them want to do it. I know for a fact that there are others in my niche, not necessarily WordPress directories, but directories in general. So there's a competitor that is charging hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month, a lot, like $400 a month for their directory solution. And I'm thinking, holy shit, you know, and I've checked these guys out. And what's funny is they don't seem to be, at least on the surface, offering a whole lot different than what I have in terms of like the total package of features and the things that it can do. But there are some things like it's all hosted. They do a lot of the setup. They do, you know, it's much more hands-off.
White glove, yeah.
very white glove, very concierge. So if I thought that there was a market for it, I might double my prices and then go that way with a directory. I think I would have an easier time of doubling my prices and having like a complete concierge service with recapture, where we do all of your email marketing for you. We monitor your campaigns. We check out, we write the copy. We do the graphics, you know, and then you could just have different price plans that say, well, here we just do the graphic or we just do the copy. Here we do the copy and the graphics. Here we do that plus analytics. We'll do A/B testing, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's lots of ways you can slice and dice that. So with recapture, I could see an easier sell of that because we're closer to the money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can convince somebody that if they spent $300 a month with you, that you're going to make them $10,000 a month, they're going to be like, yeah, dude, I'll sign up for that all day. Yeah.
You
got to find those customers and you got to know how to pitch them. You got to know what their pain points are, the things that they're suffering with. But I think it would be possible with recapture.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the one thing that you alluded to that I think is the only way that people can get away with just charging double without really justifying it with value or product is if there's some kind of moat or differentiator to your product that no one else has. So you're the only podcast hosting platform that directly integrates to WordPress. You can charge whatever you want, and a lot of people would sign up. Or you're the only email, you know, abandoned cart recovery system for Magento. You could charge whatever you want. That's a rare circumstance, but there I can think of a couple of those that people are kind of the only show in town, only good show in town, and so those people can just charge more without really backing it up with like features or value, right?
The other, I would agree with that, and I would say that there's one other case that I would say is out there. Like if you're just blatantly underpriced, so you went in and your competitors are all charging $79 a month and you came in at $29, you could still double your price and still undercut your competitors and still do better, assuming that your service is better than theirs and you know all things being equal or you're a better offering than them and you're just plain underpriced.
Yep.
So that I don't see that happening as much anymore, although every now and then I go onto HN and I see some idiot who's charging $9 a month for something and I'm like, ah, stop it. Ah,
yep.
I just want to like reach through the monitor and grab them and shake them and say, ah, you need to talk to Patrick McKenzie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So aside from dumb stuff like that and just blatant underpricing, I think that's really where you would have to go to fix that problem.
Yeah. 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 So the second question, what would you do if all of your revenue disappeared today? And so this talks to...
Fucking panic. I would completely and utterly panic. I think it would be a night and with me and some Stranahans and a very tearful conversation with my wife. All right. But once you get past that, then it's like, all right, what do you do about it?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the kind of comment here is this is like a broader conversation about portfolio planning and thinking about investing in your future. Dave, I think both of us probably are diversified too much right now with multiple different businesses and interests and all this kind of stuff. And I honestly think it probably is hurting both of us maybe even more than we realize. But I do think that having another way you can make money, whether it's another business or keeping a skill set sharp to go start consulting or something, is super valuable. And I think it's always something that, like, I have in my mind, like, you know, running a couple of businesses or whatever. I am also always like upping my personal value, right? So, like, if I had to go start consulting, I probably could, you know? And I think that like, that's for me, like at this point, I would hope I'd never have to go back to having a job again because now I have like skills that are marketable. And so I think if your product or service business just goes down the toilet, that's like a pretty reasonable option for a lot of us.
Well, sure. As a freelancer of, God, I don't even know how many years at this point where I even want to market, but a lot, you know, at least 2 decades of some form of freelancing. clearly I could just lean back on freelancing and use a new skill set. And like the fact that recently I did stuff with Node means that I could go and do some Node consulting, which is much probably easier to find jobs in at this point than, say, Java consulting, which is where most of my wheelhouse is for my freelance client. So there's certainly that to consider. I was going to answer the question actually just from a pure business perspective. Because yes, if everything fell through the toilet, like if all my businesses tanked overnight spontaneously at the same time, which is unlikely to happen, then I could fall back on that. But let's assume that it's just one business that hit the skids. Let's say it's the WordPress business that died overnight. All right, well, so then I have to ask myself the question, why did it die? What changed about the market fundamentally that made everybody shift away from that? So I'd want to understand that. Once I understood that, then I could say, all right, am I in a position where I can leverage that these people now suddenly want to move to something else? Like, is everybody moving off of WordPress? Should I start, you know, because I've got this huge email list to the tune of like almost 40,000 people. So I now have 40,000 in an audience that I could contact. What can I contact them with that is of value to them? So maybe WordPress, you know, maybe Matt and, you know, everybody in the WordPress community is spontaneously combusted and a la Infinity War. And now WordPress is no longer a viable option and everybody's panicking trying to get off.
Yeah.
Great. So now you have to write some content about
which might happen with Gutenberg, right?
It might. Who knows? It might. And so, like, I've got an audience of 40,000. I could start sending out content that talks about, hey, how to move off of WordPress to whatever. Whatever is looking like the thing that everybody is moving to. Maybe start doing some consulting around that. Maybe, you know. So there are tangible assets that no matter if the business tanked, I would still have in my possession, mostly around the audience. So that's one approach that I would take. If it was something like Recapture, I would probably want to understand again, like why, you know, it doesn't seem likely that abandoned carts are suddenly no longer viable overnight. That I just can't imagine a scenario where that happens unless every single vendor suddenly puts in advanced abandoned cart functionality into all of the platforms, which has historically not happened. So I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I can say that I would probably look at other things in e-commerce and be like, all right, money is still flowing online. What can I do to offer value that are that people need in that space? And do I have contacts in there? Like I have some expertise now. I know some people. I know agencies. So I could use my network as a way of leveraging that and then try to build something for the future. Yeah, I mean, I would say that's the way I would approach it.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the one thing that that you touched on just to kind of reemphasize there is, I think these days all of us are working on or with some kind of platform, and so how to make sure that you're a value-added aspect of that platform and not something that the platform can replace directly is something to avoid all of your revenue disappearing today. And I think we've talked about this before, I think, but just like, yeah, Dave, like you mentioned, like Shopify is not going to replace everything you do with Recapture. They might, and they do have some of the things, but the more you can add value to what you offer all of those people at Shopify to where they could never replace you, is like, I don't know, something I always think about is like, you know, how can I be indispensable even though we integrate with, you know, a couple of different platforms? So.
Yeah, there are plenty of one-trick pony Shopify apps that I see out there, and a lot of people offer them as free apps, and I think that what they're trying to do is build a following, so they're trying to build a portfolio, and one of the common strategies in Shopify is to build a free app, get a bunch of people to install it, and then use that as a marketing hinge to try to get them to do a something else, and there's plenty of businesses out there that just launch little free apps and they're trying to use that to get people into a paid app. But, you know, there's a – so my friend Rich Buggy, who is a listener of the show – hi, Rich. Shout out to Rich Buggy here, who lives down under. And he and I were having a conversation one time about Shopify apps, and he said something that I thought was very true. And the more I watch the Shopify app store, the more I think this is heading in this direction, is that all apps are basically tending towards free. So we're kind of heading to the, you know, it's a race to the bottom.
Hmm.
And I think that's true to a certain extent for really basic functionality, because everybody's trying to distinguish themselves by being the free app for X. But after a while, you no longer are distinguished if there's a sea of free apps all for X, you know?
Yeah.
And then people are just confused, and then they go by ratings or search terms or whatever. So it's about gaming the search in the store, and that only takes you so far. So anyway, I'm thinking that if you're going to be in the app store, you really have to distinguish yourself in a way that provides significant value over whatever is in the app store there for free, or for what you get by default on that platform. So, like, for example, the Shopify abandoned cart emails, they suck. Mm-hmm. They just suck. You get one email, the designer's lousy, you can't, you know, there's limited scheduling options. They give you like six choices of what times you want to do it afterwards. And, you know, there's no follow-up after that. So Recapture, you know, is not going to be replaced by Shopify, because they don't seem to have any interest in doing that. And then there's also the whole deliverability problems and the monitoring and the analytics, and just yep. Shopify does none of that. And even some of the free apps, they just don't come anywhere close to that. So those that are serious about their store and serious about tracking their users' behavior and trying to figure out why they're abandoning and a live cart feed and all this other stuff, like, there's an obvious reason to go with Recapture if you have carts that are being left in your store.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not particularly worried about that. In fact, I think I had somebody next to me who had asked me about my business when I was up at Shopify Unite this year, and they had said something about, you know, abandoned carts are now available for everybody. And they looked at me like, oh my God, your business just got ruined. And I was like, no, not really.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, it's now given more people the taste of the shitty experience, so that they're more incented, I think, to find something that works better.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I don't know. I think you can look at it in different ways. That's just my take on it.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Yep.
All right. So the third question here, I just got to pull up real quick. And this one is, I think, one of the more interesting ones. The first two were really good, but this one, you know, I love constraints. When you get a constraint, I think you have to think really creatively. And this one throws an artificial constraint on you. And in this one, the thinking exercise, I think, would benefit you even if you don't actually do this, because you can definitely find things where you can optimize your business and make it more lean. And the question is, how would you go about delivering everything you do today on only 70% of the cost?
Work a lot more.
Work a lot more.
And that's not an acceptable answer. Yeah, so I mean, I think that the answer is not the important part, but the thought process is like, what do you absolutely, absolutely, absolutely have to have to deliver your product or service? What do you think you have to have, but really your customers don't care about, or don't care about in the way that you provide it, or the quality, or the fashion, or the timeliness, or whatever? So with Castos, we didn't have built-in analytics for like 6 months. And, I mean, you know, what it didn't affect like the cost. Well, it did a little bit affect the cost of providing our service. But, I mean, that's kind of like to the point of like how much of like what you think you need to deliver to a customer do you actually need to deliver? And the answer a lot of times is a lot less or just different than what you think. Even if you're like really in the business, like I'm really in the podcasting space, you're really in the e-commerce space, like you think you know what customers want. But a lot of times it's like these really weird, tangential, unanticipated things that you think that they need, but they don't really. And so that's where I would go first and say, like, is there 30% of the stuff we do right now that I think is nice or our customers think is nice, but they won't leave if we don't do it? You know?
Yeah. I have a great example of what you just talked about, that it's something that happened to me in Recapture here. So earlier in the year, I had like two or three customers that were like, you need to support coupons. And I'm like, well, we do support coupons. They're like, no. You support throwing a coupon code inside the text of the email. What I want to do is have them click a button, have the coupon code already applied, and go straight to the cart. And I'm like, oh, well. And then I sat down and designed this whole thing that integrated in and had dynamic coupon codes, because this person had talked about wanting to have unique codes per email. So I got completely off the rails, and I wrote this whole long specification. My developer did the estimation, came back to me and said, yep, that'll take 3 to 4 months. And I'm like, oh, shit. And this is just before GDPR came out. So then all of a sudden it was like, total fire drill. All right, fuck coupon codes. We're going back to GDPR, because that's got to get there, or I lose, you know, a significant double-digit percentage of my revenue for people that are bailing off the platform. So I prioritized it. So I shelved it. Now, this last month, one of the things that we got sidetracked on was Shopify. I had a user that came in and said, hey, we need coupons. And I was like, oh, shit. And they said, yeah, if we don't have this, we're not going to sign up at all. And I said, all right, I totally understand. So I went back, but at this time I was like, I just knew we didn't have 4 months. I didn't have the budget. We're already having to run lean for other reasons. And I sat down with my developer and I said, dude, what is the bare bones minimum thing that we can do to get this? Can we pull this off like in a short period of time? And he went out, looked at it, and said, yeah, I can do it in about 8 hours. I'm like, what?
where was that?
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't stop 6 months ago or 8 months ago and think, what's the bare bones minimum that I need to make this out the door to get, and we got it in.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they signed up. So, I mean, it's already paid for itself, or it will pay for itself in a few months, because it wasn't that expensive to put in. But, you know, now I announced it. I sent out a thing, and I got a huge response on the list. Like, it was one of my most opened things. And so we went and looked at that for Magento as well, and we're going to add that in a similar kind of simple way for Magento to get that functionality in there. And if I hadn't been thinking about it, like, what's the bare minimum we can do to get this in? If I hadn't been thinking that way, we would never have gotten it.
Yeah,
because I just had that in the back of my mind. This is a 4 month project. We're fucked.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the case.
So yeah, it's funny. Jonathan, our lead developer for Castos, he and I talk about and around this a lot. Of just like, I say, we need multiple podcast support for Castos. So like, you can create as many different podcasts as you want under a single Castos account now. We talked about this 6 months ago, probably, and it was like, yeah, so, you know, this is a big deal and refactoring the database and all this kind of stuff. And then it comes around to like our Spotify integration that we just released. I was like, hey, this has to happen. Like, what is the easiest, dumbest, jankiest way we can do this right now? And it was like, oh yeah, that's like one extra column in like a database table. And I'm like, oh, that's great. Like, that's wonderful. But I think like as business owners and product users, we always should try to get to like, what is the easiest way to get this out there so our customers use it, so we can learn more about what they really want. Because what they say they want is not what they really want, really. You know, like, how can we give them like a taste of what they're talking about so that they can then come back and say like, hey, this thing is cool, but if you had this, it would really, really be great. And then you talk about like doubling your prices or whatever. It's like, if you can give them a taste of a little bit of an expanded feature to where they can talk in like a, I don't want to say an educated way, but like an experienced way about what that really means to their business or their experience, then that really gets to like value, I think. But as like developers and product owners, I think we always should be trying to pare back new features to the bare bones the first time, and then build on them from there. Because it's easy to go just fucking, you know, build stuff.
Way too easy. Way too easy. Totally agree. And, you know, and if your customers are like mine, like, I can get them to have a conversation with me, but they're not going to circle back and, like, let me have five other rounds of an hour each to hash out the details of these little things. They're going to give me enough that I can move forward, but then I have to take some intelligent guesses and fill in the blanks. And if I had enough of those conversations, maybe I can fill in the blanks in a common way.
Yeah.
But oftentimes I still find that there's just gaps in my knowledge. They won't spend the time with you because they've got other shit to do. They aren't going to, like, walk you through this and handhold you all the way to the end. If you've got a customer that's like that, you are so incredibly lucky, because my customers are way too busy for that kind of stuff. If I get 5 to 10 minutes of their time, an hour on the phone is really challenging to get at times. If I can get 15, 20 minutes, that's incredible.
Yeah.
An hour is unheard of practically at this point, unless they, like, have something they want to tell me. If it's coming from me, no way. If it's coming from them, an hour is not a problem. But it's rare that somebody wants to drive it like that. And yeah, that's the problem that you face.
I think that's just pretty,
I think you can't get all the information. You will never have perfect information. You have to move forward on the best possible amount of information you can gather, and then gather feedback from it in a minimal viable product sort of way.
Yeah. No, that's exactly, I think that's what I'm kind of trying to say, is like a minimum viable feature, or like a beginning of a feature, to them say, like, yeah, that's great, but this, or, you know, if you had this, then that would really make it the bee's knees.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, yeah, like we talked about features a little bit previously, that, like, it's a dangerous road to go down, because you can just go, you know, build half of your product again for something that you don't really know, because you have product validation on the first, like, version of your product. Then you go build a big old feature and get nothing out of it. So yeah, like, what's the easiest way to introduce the concept of a new feature to somebody, I think, is really powerful. And we're totally off of the subject here, but I think it is, like, kind of related to the question, this third question here, but
yeah, it is. And I'll go ahead and answer it, because I haven't actually addressed the content of the question. I would say the way that I would do this right now is I would actually start doing feature metrics. Like, I have some things in the app that tell me who's using what, but I would want, like, more detailed specifics to say who's using what features in the app. And then I'm going to start asking some questions to say, what are the most important things about this? And then line that up, like, what they tell me and what their behavior shows me, and then decide what I'm going to deliver based on that. It might be killing things and shutting stuff down.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the time that Groove basically realized that their chat product was dialing up all of their development time and was getting minimal usage, and that there were other integrations out there that were better. So they just dropped it, integrated with other things, called it done.
Yep.
And that turned out to vastly improve their business as a result. So this would be one of those kinds of things that I would try to figure out, where am I spending time and money? Is it worth it in that area to spend time and money? And if it's not, where should I be reallocating that resource somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would be the way I would approach it.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, Dave, I think in the interest of time, we will save the last three questions for the part two next week of this, because I think the next three questions are equally good and insightful for everybody. So, this is really fun. Thanks to Chris for throwing these out there for everyone like us to kind of think about. And Dave, thanks for bringing these to my attention. I hope everybody enjoyed kind of our pontificating on some of these things. Next week we'll be back with the next three questions that I think are different but equally kind of interesting and engaging. So stay tuned, as you will.
And if you have a minute and you've been really enjoying the show, we would just ask that if you could share it with somebody else that you think would really get a lot of value out of our show, that would make a huge difference to us, because we are all about wanting to share our experience. We want to have other people learn and grow and build better businesses. And if you can help us do that, we'd really appreciate it. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.